So how many of you know the Chris McCandless story? Or maybe you know his alter name, Alexander Supertramp. Have you ever read the book Into the Wild? Right? Or seen the movie Into the Wild? I was just thinking, actually, it's a very interesting movie, but it's not real. There's some, parents, you'd have to preview it and fast forward certain scenes, definitely. But it's the story of Chris McCandless, who was a very bright college student who graduated from Emory University with high honors, but then chose to opt out of the whole capitalistic success, traditional view of success lifestyle, and gives away almost all of his money, gets in his old beater car, and drives to California. The car gets swamped. He's hitchhiking. His goal is to get to Alaska, because he thinks, if I really want to figure out what life's all about, if I want to get to this core of meaning, I need to just get into the wild, like following some of these British poets of Lord Byron and the like. And so he's going on this journey, and it's a fascinating tale, and it ends tragically. But one of the things, Kathy and I were just watching it on half of it on Friday. It's 2.5 hours, but the movie is. But one of the things that struck me was that, so there's a lot of complex things going on in this kid's life. Like, why would you graduate from Emory with high honors? You tell your dad you're going to go to Harvard Law School, but really you're planning this getaway, this escape from money and society, to get into nature to try to find yourself. What drives a person like that to make those kind of radical, crazy decisions? Lots of factors, I'm sure, but one of them was, that the movie brings out at least, is his family's financial culture. His mom and dad were very successful, had lots of money, but that money caused a lot of conflict between husband and wife. Enormous amounts of conflict and yelling and screaming at each other. And as kids, they just tried to shelter each other from that. And then there's this sense of love is expressed only in expensive gifts. Like he's driving this beater Datsun, old Datsun car, and for graduation, his dad's like, "We're going to get you a new car." And he's like, "Why would I want that? I've got a perfectly great car here." And so there's this huge disconnect between the values that he's developing and how his family uses money. So it was very insightful. Part of that story is that money is so much more powerful than we think it is. And it's even so powerful that it can affect how our kids grow up and the ways that they see the world, depending on how families deal with money. So this morning I want to pull together these verses on wealth and money and poverty and generosity from the book of Proverbs. Proverbs has more to say about money than any other Old Testament book. And so therefore, in one sense, Proverbs is saying, even if you're wise about every other part of your life, but you're not wise about money, you're missing true wisdom. Right? It highlights money as one of the very important areas that we've got to seek God's wisdom in. So what I want to do is kind of walk through some of the things it says in different blocks, the intriguing and incisive points that it gives on wealth. But then I want to make some applications. I want to encourage all of us to do certain things. I want to encourage husbands and wives to do certain things in regards to money. And then even youth, I want to encourage you to be thinking about how to you're approaching money, even at your perhaps tender age. So let me read in the middle of the page, and then we'll begin to talk about this. Better is a poor man who walks in his integrity than a rich man who is crooked in his ways. A good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, and favor is better than silver or gold. Better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and trouble with it. Better is a dinner of herbs where love is than a fattened ox and hatred with it. Riches and honor are with me, says Lady Wisdom, enduring wealth and righteousness. My fruit is better than gold, even fine gold, and my yield than choice silver. Do not toil to acquire wealth. Be discerning enough to desist. When your eyes light on it, it is gone, for suddenly it sprouts wings, flying like an eagle towards the heavens. When the wicked dies, his hope will perish, and the expectations of wealth perishes too. Riches do not profit in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. Father, as we look at your word, as we look at these verses that you have written and you have put together in this book of Proverbs, would you help us? Would you help us because the topic is complex? You say there's many different themes and ideas going on in Proverbs about money. Would you help us, Lord, because our hearts are easily misguided and easily drawn away. And we live in a culture that yells and screams almost more loudly about money than anything else. Lord, would you help us because we need your wisdom. We confess our foolishness, whether we can see it or not, whether we feel our need for your teaching about money or not, we are in need, Father, for you to take us by the hand and to walk with us and to show us what is wise, but also what is redemptive and merciful, and how you have even shown us mercy through putting Jesus' death and resurrection for us in terms of money. Would you walk with us and help us, Father, in Jesus' name. Amen. So, intriguing and incisive points on money. The first point is, wealth is a good gift, but there are significant dangers at many turns. So I want to start actually at the top of the bulletin and give two things that are compare with each other. So first it says about Solomon, it pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked for wisdom. And so God says, behold, I give you a wise and discerning mind so that none like you has been before you and none shall rise up after you. I also give you what you have not asked for, both riches and honor, so that no other king shall compare with you all your days. So Solomon asked for wisdom. Right, if God showed up in a dream to you and said you can have one thing, what'd you ask for? Well, Solomon asked for wisdom, and God says, good answer! You know what? Because you asked for that, I'm going to give you a whole mess of other stuff. I'm going to give you wealth that you didn't even ask for because I'm pleased with you. So if God gave him wealth and riches, it must be good, right? God wouldn't have given him something bad, right? So God giving riches to Solomon was something good that God was giving to him. So money's not bad. Having too much money is not bad. It can be, but it doesn't have to be. Because God giving Solomon wisdom shows us that. But then, as we start to read through Proverbs, if you look at the second paragraph on the top of the bulletin, after the introduction and after this call of, son, listen to me and your mother, what's the very first topic that gets dealt with? It's money. And it's dealt with it's speaking to youth, right? It's speaking to, the context is not, you know, you 50-year-olds who are struggling with money. It's actually you teens that are gonna struggle with money. It says, if they say, come with us, let us lie in wait for blood, let us ambush the innocent without reason, like Sheol, let us swallow them alive and whole, like those who go down to the pit, we shall find all precious goods. We shall fill our houses with plunder. Throw in your lot among us, young man. We will all have one purse. If someone says that to you, the response is, my son, do not walk in the way with them. Hold back your foot from their paths. Such are the ways of everyone who is greedy for unjust gain. It takes away the life of its possessor. So the very first topic that Proverbs brings about is the youth's temptation and influences around them to join the gang to get easy money, to get easy wealth. Come and join us. We're going to we'll just knock over a couple of people. They've got too much money anyways. We're going to steal some stuff from them. We're going to find some easy ways to get a hold of riches for us. Come on, we'll have a great time together. I think it's shocking that that's the very first thing that Proverbs wants to talk about. And it's addressing it in clearly a youth environment. So if you want to abstract that one layer up, youth, there's lots of people, lots of commercials, lots of voices in our culture calling us to, there's a way to get easy money, right? There's a way to craft your life so everything is going to move and work perfectly well. Here's the good life. Throw your lot in with us. Join the club. We'll show you the good life. So I think there's some inherent tension there, right? God gives, on a big scale, God gives Solomon riches, which are a good gift to him. He might have used it wrongly at some point, but it was a good gift. And yet we've got to be very concerned about the temptation to greed, the lure of greed. One person a long time ago, I was reading that they were doing a series on various things from Proverbs, and they were going to do one on greed. And this pastor's wife said, yeah, be prepared for no one to show up, because nobody thinks they have a problem with greed, right? Because they always know somebody who has more money than they do, and so they think, oh, I'm not greedy because I don't have as much as Joe does. But by putting this right in the very first chapter, it's supposed to wake us up a little bit, open our eyes and realize we all have at least the temptation towards greed, no matter our situation. And even youth, we need to realize that and kind of unmask it. But we'll get to more of that later. So 1B, a godly approach to wealth requires reflection and choosing the right way by faith. So throughout Proverbs, there's this format of a better than saying, where it's contrasting two things. And the way it works is that it's not really the way you'd normally put it in the first place, right? Better is a poor man who walks in his integrity than a rich man who's crooked in his ways. And so if you go out one morning and you see a rich man and a poor man, you wouldn't say, oh, well, the poor man's in a better shape. Like, if I had to choose, I'd really want this poor man's position rather than the rich man's position. Right? So Proverbs is being, it's supposed to, they're a little bit shocking, but it's really also saying there's two paths to life. And if you have to choose between being a poor man who walks in integrity or being a rich man who is crooked in his ways, if you're wise, if you're smart, you'll choose the poor man path. Even though that's not what our hearts naturally would want to go towards, we would think, I'll be the rich man and I'll figure out how to not be crooked. Right? So Proverbs is pointing out two paths, and it's subtly calling us towards one path, but it's requiring faith to take the right path, right? Or a good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, and favor is better than silver or gold. And so we can even say in an abstract sense, oh, that's right. I have a good family name, to have a family that's solid and well-respected in the community and has favor with other people, that is better than to have a lot of money, to have a lot of wealth. But if it comes to you actually choosing one path or the other, it takes a lot of faith, right? It's not common sense, because common sense would be like, well, maybe I can sort things out myself. Maybe I can be rich and have a good name. But it takes faith to enter into this path. Better is a dinner of herbs where love is than a fattened ox and hatred with it. So some of us here are vegetarians, so this isn't really a choice. But for the rest of us, we probably have been more experienced with this. Right? You probably have been to a dinner party where there's lavish food on the table, but the relationships were strained and there was conflict and tension and you realize that it wasn't very pleasant. At least you've seen it in movies if you haven't experienced it in real life. So this one perhaps is a little closer to something we can experience, but So a simple vegetable dinner, where love is much more valuable, Proverbs is saying, than this great feast, this banquet, where there's hatred present. And then Lady Wisdom says, riches and honor are with me, enduring wealth and righteousness. My fruit is better than gold, even fine gold, and my yield than choice silver. So again, here's two paths. Would you, like Solomon does in 1 Kings 3, would you choose wisdom and forgo asking for money and wealth? It takes faith to realize, oh, no, wisdom in the end is 10, 100, a million times more valuable than having money itself. So these better than sayings are a way to point out there's two paths oftentimes in life, and it takes faith. It takes, as 15:16 says, fear the Lord to discern what is the right one and to move ahead on it. One of the ways that we see these better than passages working and understand that they are true is to see the limits of wealth. Do not toil to acquire wealth. Be discerning enough to desist. When your eyes light on it, it is gone. For suddenly it sprouts wings, flying like an eagle towards heaven. So the wise person realizes that money is very temporal, right? It's fickle. Right? It can disappear in a moment. And so why would you like pour out all your energy and your time and your life to try to acquire it when it can just evaporate due to a variety of issues, right? They didn't have a stock market crash in this day, but they had other things that showed the temporalness of money. So even in when life is just going around normal, money is possible to just disappear, to fly away like an eagle. But 11:7 says, when the wicked dies, his hope will perish, and the expectations of wealth perishes too. So even wealth and money are only valuable while you're alive. There's no, well, you know, you can't take it with you. It's a tool that's valuable while you're living, but as soon as you die, it's nothing. It's gone. And then lastly, 11:4, riches do not profit in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. So money can do a lot of things on earth, but it can't deal with that great existential question of what happens when you die. Right? In the day of evaluations, it won't come. You won't be able to reach for it to get any benefit out from it. But righteousness is something that isn't limited to this life. So there's a variety of proverbs that talk about how weak money is, really, in spite of the fact that our culture talks about it as strong and providing and being able to do almost anything for us. So what does Proverbs counsel us to do in regards to money? It doesn't call us to be Alexander Supertramps, right? It doesn't call us to opt out. What it calls us to do is to earn wealth, but to do it with righteousness and wisdom. So there's three different ways that it talks about that. First of all, it says, pursue earning wealth in an ethical manner. 28:8 says, whoever multiplies his wealth by interest and profit gathers it for him who is generous to the poor. So I put that there intentionally because if you're saving for your kids' college fund or your retirement, you are gathering money with interest and profit, right? It's in the market. You're hoping for a multiplier effect to take place. So is the market bad? Why is biblical Christians shouldn't have their money in the market? I think what's different is there is no market like there is today in this day that if you are getting interest or profit, it's because you're exacting it from one person. Right? You had set up and somebody came to you and said, I need some money to keep my land or to feed my kids. And you're like, well, okay, I'll give you some money, but you're going to owe me 10, 20% interest year by year. So you're unjustly extracting money from them. And in Israel culture, you couldn't charge interest to a fellow Israelite. You could charge it to a foreigner, but within the culture, you weren't supposed to be making money off individuals. So I think more of what's going on here is he who multiplies his wealth by payday loans gathers it for him who's generous to the poor. Right, so a payday loan is like, let me get rich by impoverishing you because you need money. Right, so any system where you're trying to make money off of taking it from someone because you have more power than them, then that's really, I think, what it's getting at. But continuing on, 2017, bread gained by deceit is sweet to a man, but afterwards his mouth will be full of gravel. Don't you love the imagery? Right? There's a certain amount of like, you can secretly, I got some more stuff. This is awesome. Right? It tastes sweet for a moment. But the long-term effect is, it's like chewing gravel. Right? I haven't done that recently, but it rattles your head and your teeth, right? So so deceit, is not our way to be pursuing wealth. 21:6, getting of treasure by a lying tongue is a fleeting vapor and a snare of death. Right, so there's a lot. Just look up, open the financial page anywhere, and you can see lots of examples of trying to get treasure with a lying tongue. Wealth gained hastily will dwindle, but whoever gathers little by little will increase it. So this is one of Proverbs' ideas is wise people gather money properly little by little, right? It's a long, slow approach to things and not the, let me quickly figure out how I'll take this risk and I'll double what I've got on the market. No, it's wise people reject the hasty approach and they take this slow, little by little approach. So one aspect of how we build wealth is related to ethics, related to how we choose to approach that, where our mind is, where our heart is. But another approach is consequences. So Proverbs has something going on inside of most all of its topics. It's called the deed-consequence relationship. It's saying for the vast majority of things, if you do something here, there's going to be a consequence of that deed here, and you can't avoid that relationship. Right? So if you put it into the food, if you eat ribeye 3 times a week, and you eat butter biscuits and butter potatoes the other 4 days, you're going to have health problems. Right? So maybe there's 0.5% of the population that just biologically and physiologically doesn't have cholesterol problems. But for everybody else, there's a pure relationship. You eat steak, you have health problems later in life. You eat lots of carbs and sugar, you're going to probably get some aspect of diabetes. So with money, Proverbs is very concerned to say, you know what, there's a relationship. There's a law in the world that for the most part, you can't violate. You can't bend it to your will. If you do certain things, if you spend lavishly now, you're going to have trouble later in life. If you save now, the future is much more likely to go in directions that you would like and that others around you would like to have happen. Now, wisdom in the Bible is aware that the D-consequence relationship breaks down at certain points, right? So Job is all about how it breaks down. Because we know that Job is righteous, but his friends think, well, there's the D-consequence relationship. You are suffering, so you must have sinned. You must have done something wrong. And so the majority of the book is that argument about that. So the Bible knows that there are exceptions to the deed-consequence relationship. And Ecclesiastes brings out exceptions too. So the Bible's smart about that, but Proverbs wants us to say, realize that the majority of the time, you can't change that relationship. If you do this, this is going to happen, whether you like it or not. Whether you think, In my generational culture, our view towards money, we don't believe that there's this relationship between that and that. We're going to do something different. Proverbs says, no, you can't bend the deed relationship into the way you want it. So 21:17 says, whoever loves pleasure will be a poor man. Whoever loves wine and oil will not be rich. Right? If you have expensive loves and taste and you're like, I don't care about the future, I just love it, I want it, I have the right to spend it on this and this and this. Proverbs says, you know, okay, fine, go ahead. But in general, 95% of the time what's going to happen is you're going to be in the poor category instead of the medium or rich category. So there's the expense side of things. And then 10:4, a slack hand causes poverty, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. He who gathers in summer is a prudent son, but he who sleeps in harvest is a son who brings shame. So there's an expense side of deed consequences, then there's a working side of deed consequence. Right? There's a number of different proverbs about the one who just wants to relax and play and have fun and the result that comes there. And so here it's put in terms of sons, in terms of youth, and developing a culture of industriousness and responsibility. And the whole, when we read about the sluggard, the lazy person, Proverbs has a lot to say about that, and it falls into the same category. So there's consequences we can't avoid. And then to just reiterate a little bit what we said last week, another one of Proverbs' wisdom things is limit your liabilities. And I took up the space here intentionally because I love how it puts it. Right? It's such graphic language, in intensive language. My son, if you have put up security for your neighbor, that means you've either co-signed on his loan or you've given him something that you're going to lose if he doesn't come through. If you've put up security for a neighbor, have given your pledge for a stranger, if you are snared in the words of your mouth and caught in the words of your mouth, like you committed to something but you realize now that was a dumb thing to have done, then do this, my son, and save yourself. For you have come into the hand of your neighbor. Go, hasten, and plead urgently with your neighbor. Give your eyes no sleep and your eyelids no slumber. Save yourself like a gazelle from the hand of the hunter, like a bird from the hand of the fowler. So part of Proverbs is, this seems overblown, right? It seems too extreme. But see, that's what Proverbs is saying. No, don't. Be very careful about what liabilities you take on and what commitments you make. You might be like, oh, I made this commitment, but I'm so embarrassed to go and say, oh, I made a mistake, let me out of my commitment. That's too uncomfortable for me, right? But that's why Proverbs says that's important. That's why it says, do this, my son, save yourselves. Go, hasten, plead urgently. Right, saying even if it's uncomfortable, be very careful about the liabilities that you take on. So, of course, in our day and age, mortgages, if you're going to buy a house, you have to take on a debt, a liability. Right? And there's another proverb that says the lender is the master over the borrower. And if you own a home and you have a mortgage and you get the monthly bill, you know, yes, there's a master and it ain't me, right? It's I got to pay this, otherwise life gets very uncomfortable for me. And cars oftentimes, right, we need to take out a loan for it. But Proverbs would say wisdom is be very, very careful about any other loans, liabilities that you take on. And then here's two proverbs about money and family. House and wealth are inherited from fathers, but a prudent life is from the Lord. I really like that, because I think a lot's going on here. Right? Because the Lord is greater than fathers, right? So it's an implied better than proverb. So house and wealth come from our parents, perhaps, but even as good as they are, a prudent wife is so much better than that. Or to abstract it, a wise husband, getting married to a wise husband is from the Lord and is so much more important than a house or wealth. And so we'll talk about this a little bit more in a moment, but how husbands and wives relate about money is really, really important. Right? The number one conflict in marriage is money. And so setting money culture is something, a topic of wisdom that Proverbs wants to highlight. And so a prudent wife is much more valuable, really, than house and wealth because it comes from God. And then listen to this. A good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children, but the sinner's wealth is laid up for the generous. Does that scare you? You're like, I've been working hard enough to get college and retirement, but now you're telling me a wise person has inheritance for my grandkids? Come on, well, what else do I have to do? Like, okay, where's the money going to come from? Well, but Proverbs is moving us in a certain direction. It's saying, don't underestimate the resources that a wise person plans for towards the end of their life or towards the middle or the end of their life. Don't just think, oh, I can get by with this, and this, everything, be cool, I can spend the rest of myself. No, Proverbs has us think about the long plan and how as families, you even might be able to bless your grandchildren. Now, obviously, inheritance becomes a very complicated thing and lots of people might not be in a position to. It might even be offensive for some people to think of, how can I ever leave an inheritance to my children's children? But Proverbs is just redirecting our thoughts and calling us to something much greater, or at least to be thinking about it. But Proverbs also talks about poverty and generosity. For poverty says, the fallow ground of the poor would yield much food, but it's swept away through injustice. It's really Proverbs has, there's two things that cause poverty. One is injustice, that there are payday lenders that keep the poor trapped in their situation. There are structures of injustice going on because people are profiting from it. But there also is a case that where poor financial decisions are made and you end up poor because of that. Right, the consequences, whoever loves pleasure will be a poor man, whoever loves wine and oil will not be rich. So Proverbs sees, in addition to other things, there's personal responsibility issues in poverty, there's also structural injustice issues in poverty. But 22:2 is really helpful for us in terms of how we see people. The rich and the poor meet together, the Lord is the maker of them all. And our culture sees value in terms of your wealth or how you're dressed or how you present wealth or your bank account. But God has made the poor person and the rich person. He is the Lord of all of them. And that's, we ought to see everyone's created in God's image. God created all of us. And so that's where real value and truth lies. And then generosity. One gives freely, yet grows all the richer. Another withholds what he should give and only suffers want. So somehow there's this sense in Proverbs that the generous are blessed. Whoever oppresses a poor man insults his maker, but he who is generous to the needy honors him. That's a powerful proverb, right? Does anyone wake up thinking, I think I'd like to insult my maker this morning? But oppression of a poor person is the equivalent of insulting God who has made us. Whoever is generous to the poor lends to the Lord, and he will repay him for his deed. Notice how closely the Proverbs put the poor person's place and how we relate to them with how we relate to God. It recasts our focus upon how we really see people. So I think Proverbs in general is saying money and wealth are good, use it for good things, but beware, there's dangers of greed and temptations and traps and pitfalls right and left. And so we got to have our eyes open. And we got to also realize, what is my heart yearning for and longing for? Proverbs rather would have us enter onto the path of over the long haul, in little by little. Seek to work hard and be wise about your expenses and limit your liabilities and grow wealth, but grow it so that you can be generous to people. So that you'll have enough, but so you can be generous to those around you who don't have as much, because there's a way in which when we lend to the poor, when we use our financial resources in wise spiritual ways, we're lending to God. We're honoring Him. So, application. Everyone, I think we all need to do some work of unmasking money. Right? We need to become cultural critics and say, even kids to be like, oh, Mom, look, that commercial is implying that if you have money, everything in your life will go well. Well, that clearly is not true. Let's pull the mask off of money. Right? Let's become cultural critics and expose the wrong things in our culture about money. And let's also, I would suggest we write our own better than proverbs. Right? You've got examples here of better than ones. Why don't you write your own? Because this really gets at where your heart is, right? And you might have to write it in terms of the abstract. This is better than these riches and abounding money. But I realize I have a tension there, right? I can write it in the abstract, but my heart is pulled towards the riches. Lord, help me to have faith. Help me to see that for what it really is and to choose your better path. Does that make sense? To realize, and you might just figure out, what is it about wealth and riches that your heart is tempted by? What are the things that do woo it, that siren song that makes you start envisioning a different life or the different things that it could give you? Money does different things for different ones of us. We'll talk about it in just a second. And so expose that to yourself and write your own better than proverb. Develop wise financial practices now, right today. If Proverbs would say, you know, you're not too young to start thinking about money and being responsible with it, because if you're 10 years old and you do it this way, there's a trajectory to money, right? The way that you start right now and the way that you develop a pattern, it carries on into the rest of your life. And then pursue generosity. Seek to have enough to give to those who don't have and to give into situations that would please and honor the Lord. Being able to have enough to be generous is a wise, righteous thing. All right, so now husbands and wives, if you don't hear anything else, hear this. Husbands and wives, get on the same page financially. Build your financial unity and your common understanding. Have common values about money. No matter where you're starting out right now, but move towards commonality in money and how you spend it and what it means and what your goals are. And grow that unity, right? Because it'll pay tons of benefits, right? It'll reduce conflict and arguments, right? Because money is the number one conflict producer in marriage. So the more unity you have around that, the less conflicts you have. It'll help set a culture for your family, right? The right culture. You don't want a McCandless culture growing inside your family, and so that Chris is like, I'm out of here. I'm going to opt out of everything because, I mean, that's the extreme example, but we want to set a culture that blesses our kids for their future in relations to money. And the only ways if we can do it is if husband and wife get on the right page together. ask for help. You know, so there's three options I'm giving you here. One of the benefits of being a small multi-generational church or having people at all the age group is there's people that have been through the place that you're in right now. Right? There's people that have gotten their kids off through college and their kids are out, and so they figured out a way to do that. There's people that have recently retired that they were able to realize, and they retired at 65 and they were able to make it all work. So ask for help, right? Take advantage of the benefits in the congregation. So here's three things. One is, here's a short 5-page thing on financial management that comes from a premarital resource that Kathy and I use. And it talks about budgets, it talks about what are your goals, but then it even talks about what's your temptation? Is it money as status? Is it money as security? Is it money for enjoyment? Is it money for control? Realizing if what's going on with that could be really helpful. It could be really helpful to realize, oh, my spouse is really interested in money as status, but I'm really interested in money as enjoyment or money as security. So no wonder we battle about money a lot and we disagree. So now that we know that, we could take steps to try to get on the same page. So if you're interested in this, you can come and look at it. I'll print one for you. I'll email a copy to you. So this is step one. Step two is maybe you do this and you realize we could use a little bit of help, right? There's a lot of young couples in the church and there's a lot of older couples in the church. I will help broker a relationship, right? You might be a younger couple and come and say, I'd really like to talk to someone about this, this, and this, and what they did, and how to make this work, and could you help me? Could we talk to them? Yeah, let me set it up for you. All right, so take advantage of that resource. And then if you want to get even further, Kathy and I are both trained in this premarital and marital counseling tool that's simple but effective. It helps get to the right questions to ask and discuss, and sometimes you need a third party just to help guide your discussions and to move you further towards unity. So ask for help. And then work hard to set a righteous financial culture now in your family because it will pay dividends later. And then youth. Proverbs is part of the whole scope of Proverbs is young men, let's talk together. Let's talk about the wisdom you're going to need to think about today so that your future looks bright and good. And so it's really helpful to read. I mean, you should probably read yourself 1 to 11 to 19 and just think about it. The first thing out of the gate is, kids, watch out for gangs of people that are going to try to gather you in with promises of quick money and quick enjoyment. But Proverbs says the destiny of those is punishment and even death. So it's time for you, young men, young women, to start thinking about what's the better than? Let me talk through these better thans and which one do I think is right and which ones do I think are wrong? I'm not sure these are right. It's time to start to let Proverbs question you about that. Realize that the consequences, that deed, consequence relationship, the sooner you kind of get on board with this is the way money works in terms of limiting expenses and being industrious and earning money and not taking on liabilities, the better your future will look. You know, one thing about that is, you know, sometimes in college or after college, a boy meets a girl and girl meets a boy and they just fall in love. They're just all googly-eyed at each other and, wow, she's so pretty and so smart. That's awesome. But then you talk about money and you realize, wait, how much debt do you have? And it's not college debt, it's credit card debt? Oh, I'm not quite sure I want to get engaged to you, man or woman, that has that. Because it means part of who you are is you don't have wisdom and righteousness over this area of finance. And my pastor said the number one area of conflict in marriage is finances. So in other words, dudes, you can be a very attractive suitor to a woman when it's time by having good financial management right now, by working towards that. And then work on generosity, right? Growing generosity one way or another, whether it's start small, take a baby step, but growing generosity is the direction that Proverbs wants us to move in. That we work hard so we have enough. We don't love our money so much, but we love what God is doing in the world. We love God's work in the world. Let's draw, let's enable me, Father, to be able to be generous to others. And then, of course, one of the ways that the New Testament pulls all of this discussion into the gospel is in the third quote when it says, "You know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that you by his poverty might become rich." I've read that many times before, and you might be like, yeah, okay, I've heard that. You know, every time I read that, though, and think about it, it's almost audacious. It's almost inappropriate that the gospel is put in terms of money. But on the other hand, it shows that Jesus' self-sacrifice is put in terms of money. But on the other hand, it's the gospel pulling money into itself and saying, no, if you're going to walk with me, if you're going to walk in with Jesus, saying, if you believe in me, if you love me and I've paid the penalty for your debt, then money is part of everything. And it's not Jesus is our example to give away our money, right? That's not at all what's going on here. It's that Jesus was rich. But when he voluntarily chose to become poor, he created the spiritual dynamic that when we follow him by faith, that dynamic can be at work within us, enabling us to be rich in the sense that that Proverbs talks about wisdom making us rich. And then look at the last quote. Look how Paul takes up that idea and he's living it out. Paul says in 2 Corinthians, "We are treated as imposters, yet we're true, as unknown and yet well known, as dying and behold we live, as punished and yet not killed, as sorrowful yet always rejoicing," and here it is, "as poor yet making many rich." Paul's taking up that same thing, that the gospel of Jesus making himself poor for us, has saved us, but it's also created this ethic in Paul so that Paul says, as an ambassador of the gospel, I have the capacity to make people rich, even though I'm dead poor. I have nothing, yet I possess everything. So when Paul says that, it's Paul showing he has taken in the whole wide scope of the gospel and how it deals with everything. Jesus' death and resurrection, Jesus as a substitute for me, deals with everything in my life, including money, including how I feel, whether I feel rich or poor, and then even in my scope of how I relate to others. That, I, like Peter and John at the temple gate, they say, the guy asks, the beggar asks for money, says, "I don't have anything financial, but here's what I have." And by the grace of God, he heals them. But so we can do the same thing. We can be like, "I have nothing financial, but I have vast riches I'd be glad to share with you." So I would hope that Proverbs gives us some handles on the complexity of money, but it also points us in the direction both of what is a wise approach to money, but then Jesus shows us it's spiritual. It's part of what he wants to do within us, that realizing that he's made us rich by becoming poor himself, and that he wants us ultimately to be those that see themselves as spiritually rich and are able to make others rich. Father, we ask that you would let your word dwell richly in our hearts. And Lord, perhaps this is, money is a complicated topic. Lord, there's more, the very fact that there's more Proverbs about money than any other, or that Proverbs speaks so much about money that it shows us it's complicated. But Holy Spirit, would you walk beside us? Would you help us to see one or two things from these verses, from your word, that you would prompt us to work on? That we would cry out to you for help, that we would confess our struggle, but that you would enable us to be wise. Wise and even wise with our money, but even wise in generosity because you have been so generous to us. And we ask all this in Jesus' name. Amen.